Now, Jan Hocken interviews Sheldon George on his new book, Trauma and Race, Wakanian Study in American Racial Identity.
Sheldon George, welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, you teach African American literature, American literature, and cultural studies at Simmons, and you draw on literature in calling for collective ways of working through histories of racist trauma. And in your recent book, Trauma and Race, you draw on psychoanalysis in this project of rethinking trauma, but also identity politics. So let's start with the story that opens your book. You begin with the death of Jordan Davis in 2012, a 17-year-old African-American young man who was killed by a white man after an argument with Davis and two of his friends over rap music. Can you tell us about this case and how to think psychoanalytically about the violence that unfolded in this drama?
Well, what interested me in the case was the sort of excessiveness in the response of Michael Dunn, who is a 40-something-year-old white male who is coming back from a wedding reception for his son. And he stops at a gas station, and Davis and his friends are in their SUV. They're playing their music really loud. And he says to them, please turn it down. And so they do. But then they turn it back up. And it escalates into an argument. And eventually, Michael Dunn pulls his gun out of his glove compartment. He fires 10 shots at the SUV as it's retreating. And 3 shots hit Jordan Davis. One of them hit him in the liver, kills him instantly, and as they're running away, Dunn is still shooting. So there's something excessive happening there. And what's interesting about the case is that the case doesn't directly address race. In the trial, in the initial trial, he's tried twice, but in the initial trial, the judge instructs the jury that they cannot take race into consideration, that what they have to focus on is fear. And the state attorney describes what was at stake. She says basically a person in Dunn's position doesn't have to see something. He doesn't have to see an actual weapon. There just has to be reasonable fear. And so Dunn says he feared for his life. He thought they had a gun, although no gun was found. And basically what ends up happening is that Dunn is found guilty of attempted murder for the two friends who survived the incident, but the jury mistries on the charge of murder for actually succeeding in killing Jordan Davis. And so this happens at the tail end of the George Zimmerman verdict, and it seems to confirm the notion that African-American lives are not valued. So what is really interesting about the case, though, is that it doesn't seem to have a direct focus on race, even though race is so prominent in it. And I think what ends up happening is that we see that race has taken on a new language in contemporary discourse. It's a language in which we no longer talk about the racial other in terms of their body, but we tend to talk about them in terms of their culture. And so Michael Dunn talks about rap culture, the rap music that they're playing. He describes the boys as rude and obnoxious. He says he was asking for a common courtesy. And so his response gets cast as an effort to police black culture.
There's also quite a bit of contention in this case that I think gives it its resonance around defending public ground and, I mean, public space, claiming and holding public space. And of course, Florida's Hold Your Ground law, that also has versions in Texas and Arizona, is very much in play. That, and in a sense, African Americans have created popular culture and brought it into even rap, the mainstream. And so there is this contest over identity around controlling public space, both in the narrow legal sense, but I think you're saying there's also some resonance around the symbolic aspects of rap music and this guy feeling kind of trapped in his car in the gas station with these rowdy kids claiming public space.
I think one way of understanding race is as something that has both social and psychic import. And so part of what happens in this case is that the sense of confinement, the sense of a loss of control, resonates with something psychic in Dunn. I'm using Lacanian theory to think about this case. And Lacanian theory,
which for those who don't know is one of the primary schools or major schools of thought in psychoanalysis and the psychoanalytic tradition.
Right. It's a theory that focuses on language as what shapes one's identity, one's sense of self. And Lacanian theory argues that we are all subjects who are split by language. So language gives us a conscious sense of self, but separates us from the unconscious. And so there's this part of us that is excluded from conscious interaction. And the unconscious drives and motivates our conscious activities in ways that we are not aware of. And part of what happens to the subject, because there's this element of the self that the self lacks access to, is that the subject feels a sense of lack, a sense of fragmentation. And what I argue...
And you're saying this is, to some extent, universal and not itself an effect of trauma, other than, I guess, the trauma comes into what people are able to do with that sense of lack of control or something missing within the self.
Right. So race becomes a way of mediating that sense of lack. So, for example, in creating a racial identity, part of what you're doing is sort of constructing a composite self, a complemented self. You are seeking out someone who is the complement of you, someone who is like you, who makes you feel whole, who makes you feel complete, a member of your own group. And I think what has happened historically is that whiteness as a concept has been a way of unifying American national identity. And it exists in opposition to blackness, which is an identity that discursively presents African Americans often with a sense of lack, with a sense of not being fully human, fully complete. I mean, this is the discourse that's coming out of slavery.
And you're saying that gets projected, that lack on the part of the white subject gets projected onto black people as the recipient for what's disowned in oneself. But you also started with this idea of excess, and there's also this complementary side to these race identity dynamics, white identity dynamics of seeing the excesses of aggression, of sexuality, of pleasure, projecting that onto black people, which seems to be what's operating dynamically in the Michael Dunn Jordan Davis confrontation. How do you understand that relationship between projecting what's missing in the dominant subject onto the oppressed, as well as projecting an excess, a frightening excess onto them?
So the sense here is that the subject feels as though they are lacking, as though they are missing something. And the thing that is missing in them gets projected onto the other. So if it's projected to someone who is of one's own race, then the sense is that if I bond with that person who is of my own race, then I can unify with them, they are my complement, I can become whole. But if I find that the other, the racial other, has this thing that is absent from me, that is lacking, this thing that can make me whole, then what you end up with is a sense of the other as having access to something excessive, something extra, something that doesn't belong to them, something that is rightfully mine. And this is part of what we we see in the Dunn case, where Dunn ends up in prison as he's waiting for trial, and he describes all of the prisoners, who he says are mostly African-American, as individuals who are there for armed robbery. And so his sense is that they have stolen something. They've stolen something that really belongs to whites. And this is part of what he's experiencing as he's there in the gas station listening to the music. The music is pounding. It's occupying a space that should be occupied by white Americans. And he has returned to this neighborhood after having lived there for a period of time and then moving away. And so it is a space that is rightfully his, but now it's dominated by the sound, the pleasures, the modes of enjoyment of racial others that seem alien to him.
And so there are these dynamics of not only hate and fear, but envy that has been part of this line of analysis.
Exactly.
That you're describing. And before we conclude for today, I'd like you to say a little more about what psychoanalysis contributes to identity politics, particularly around the instability of these identities, because I think there can be a complaint with identity politics, whether it's based on sexual orientation, race, gender, ethnicity, that these become too fixed and politically defended, which is often necessary, but you call for recognizing something much more unstable and fluid through the lens of psychoanalysis. Can you say a bit about how you would approach identity politics generally?
Yes, I think historically African Americans have found the need to create, to adhere to race as a source of unity, a source of unifying politically. So this is what W.E.B. Du Bois finds. You know, there's a moment in his thinking where he says we must conserve racial identity, the identity that was given to us by slave masters, the identity that was the source of our oppression. We must conserve it. We must redefine it. And so he finds a political utility in racial identity. And I would agree that there is this political utility. Obviously, you need to unify if you're going to create change. But my argument would be that racial identity does not only have social import, it also has psychic import. And so part of the struggle that African Americans face, indeed the paradox that confronts them, is that in clinging to racial identity, they also expose themselves to a traumatic past. The traumatic past is always present.
And can dominate in ways that are limiting, you're saying. And and I think we might, in return to this, recognize that there have been many other alliances over time, particularly around social class and, of course, the Rainbow Coalition of Jesse Jackson campaign and campaigns now that perhaps open up a wider, more flexible, open-ended history around this. In concluding, I just want to make a pitch for your book. Sheldon, I'm talking today with Sheldon George, author of Trauma and Race, a Lacanian Study of African-American Racial Identity. It's a wonderful book, a tough read, but as I used to tell my students when they would gasp reading psychoanalytic feminist theory, that you don't have to understand every theoretical move in a book or every passage to get something out of it. So I encourage people to pick up the book. And thank you so much, Sheldon George, for being with us today, and keep up your efforts.
Thank you for having me.